to the first podcast for the British Penguins Fan Club. My name is Jonathan. Thanks for joining us. Today we're going to talk about that club. We're going to review the last few games. We're going to look at some of the things going on in the background with trades. We're going to take a few questions off Facebook and Twitter. You guys have been sending some in. We're going to finish up really with reviewing the next few games, maybe some predictions from us. And so joining me today is, you may know him as at BrickPen on Twitter, Rob Howe. Hello, Rob.
Hey, yo.
Yep. For those who are not British, Rob's from Yorkshire, and that means hello. And joining us also today is Rob Ahern at Bobby Kelso on Twitter. Good evening, Rob.
Good evening, John. Good to be here.
Well, thanks for tuning into the podcast. For all the people that have been following us on Twitter and Facebook, they're kind of going to get a feel of what the British Penguins Fan Club is all about. For those of you that have stumbled across the podcast or had it thrust upon you because you're a Penguins fan, I'll try and explain a little bit more. We have been going as a group fairly, very short time. We are growing every day on Facebook and on Twitter. Thank you guys for following us. What are we all about? Obviously we're about the Penguins, we're British, put those two things together. But really the surprising thing is that people from outside of Britain have taken us under their wing and sort of interacting with us. At the moment we don't really have a website, but we're hoping to look at that soon. A lot of the way we interact is through Twitter, especially through games. I'll exclude Yorkshire Rob from that because he can't keep awake for games that start after 7 o'clock Eastern time. Can you, Rob?
Try my best.
Yeah, we're a fledgling organisation. We're not quite sure how big it can go. We're trying to talk to the Penguins at the moment to get them on board as well. So really, it's about the fans. It's about you guys that are listening to the podcast, that are interacting with us. As where we can go, really. I mean, I think we'd maybe like to sort of get some meetups, maybe even travel all the way to the Berg itself and take in a few games. That could be one thing. Really, it's up to you guys to give us some feedback on what you'd like us to do as well, really. So keep the information coming in. I think at this point it'd be a good idea for us to introduce ourselves to you so you know a little bit more about us, and I think we'll hand over to Rob Ahern first. Rob?
Thanks, John. Yeah, as John's already mentioned, I'm on Twitter at Bobby Kelso. I've been a Pens fan since I picked it up late night TV watching in 1992 when the Stanley Cup was on. It was one of those times when you only had four channels. I used to work in a pub. I came home from the pub, sitting down about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and just flicking through to see what was on, and there it was. I think it was game three or game four. And I just got hooked, and that was it from then onwards. It was just a case of focusing on trying to find where you could get the info on the games, because in 92, 93 onwards, it wasn't really covered at all. You used to spend days looking on your dial-up modems for a clip which would take you 25 minutes to download for 30 seconds of highlights. So my main aim this year is I was over to the Pittsburgh last year to see a couple of games, and I'm going again in a few weeks to see a few more games. Favourite player is Kevin Stevens. Lots of reasons why. A lot of people won't particularly pick up on him or won't particularly like him because of the problems he did have. But for me, he was always one of my favourites. And hopefully, when I get over there later on in the year, I might try and sort out, if possible for the fan club, some interviews with backroom staff and various other people, and try and go as high up as they'll let me go. But I might find that they're not going to let me interview Mario. I might not quite be that big at the moment. So there you go, John. That's me.
Okay, thanks, Rob. And we'll hand over to the other Rob.
Thanks, John. Okay, you said I've got a couple of hours for this, yeah?
Yeah, please, mate, yeah. Keep it short.
Okay, I'm from Sheffield, which, for those of you who don't know, is a steel town like Pittsburgh. It's in the north of England, hence my unusual accent. Sheffield is probably not as widely known as it really should be. Sheffield is the birthplace of the Stanley Cup. It's where the original bowl was made in the, I guess, the late 1880s or early 1890s, before it was shipped down to London, where Lord Stanley bought the cup and blah, blah, blah. You know, the rest is history. So there's a kind of long-standing link with hockey, even though it is slightly tenuous. I got into the sport properly. I got into the sport about 14 years ago when I started to follow my hometown team, the Sheffield Steelers. But prior to that, I remember watching hockey when I was a kid. I used to watch it on grandstands on Saturday afternoons, which for kind of our North American listeners is a sports program that used to be shown on the BBC. And you used to get the likes of the Fife Flyers and Murrayfield and Durham Wasps and all those kind of teams. And I used to enjoy watching those and didn't really take to the game really until the early 90s when the Steelers came into town and sort of took over the city they've been here for the past 20 odd years now. But I didn't really get into watching the Steelers until the sort of late 90s and then became a Pens fan in 2000. So I'm a sort of a relative newbie at 13 years. I've seen the Pens play twice, once in Pittsburgh in 2002, where they were humiliated by Montreal. And then I saw them again later that year in the following season in New Jersey, when again they lost 3-1, which is kind of familiar given last weekend's scorelines. I was told I couldn't talk about this, but in a previous life, I covered the NHL for a weekly hockey magazine here in the UK. Did that for about 3 or 4 years. I've written for a number of other magazines and websites and kind of whatnot. I was the Pens beat writer for a North American-based website called Inside Hockey, which is going incredibly strong now. It's worth a look if you fancy that. And I was, for a time, I was the secretary of the British Ice Hockey Writers Association. Not entirely sure why, but I think I was, you know, daft enough to put my hand up when they asked for volunteers, which is probably a little bit like this podcast now. A quirky fact, my youngest son, who's 4 and a half, has the middle name Crosby. I wanted my eldest son to have Mario or Lemieux in there, but I wasn't allowed that. But I did get Crosby in there on the proviso that the Pens won the Stanley Cup. Now, my youngest son was born the day after we lost in Game 6 in 2008. So I think probably because I was still in tears, I was allowed to get Crosby in there as his middle name. And kind of obviously we won in 2009, so I kind of fulfilled my part of the deal. I could talk for hours, but I know I'm going to get shot down in flames. So, yeah, that's me. There we go. Back to you, Jonathan.
Oh, sorry, Rob. I was asleep for a second. What did you say?
I could hear you snoring.
Okay, mate.
Fire away, mate. Come on.
I'm going to keep it short. Well, fairly short, anyway. I've been a Pens fan since the early 90s. It's sort of waned very much so, my interest. Over the last couple of years, it's sort of ramped up greatly. Rob Ahern being one of the reasons, really. I used to work with Rob and sort of being in the same office as another Pens fan is a little bit strange in a town like Warsaw in the UK. So, I blame Rob a little bit, really. That's all right, mate. No, that's my pleasure.
That's because Warsaw's a strange town. I'm not being funny.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for that. I like Rob, do some writing as well. Obviously not quite as illustrious as Mr. Howe. I write for UK American sports fans. I've covered NHL, do cover baseball as well. But obviously my real interest is the Penguins. That's me in a nutshell, or case, as some people say, really. We've now come to the part of the podcast where we're going to look at the last few games and try and pull them apart in 7 minutes or so, which is going to be quite impressive, really. So I'm going to ask Rob Ahern to obviously talk us through the Devils games, really, because up to that point we were flying and then suddenly we weren't. What happened, Rob?
Yeah, thanks, John. I mean, five straight going on for six. It was expected that we were going to give them a really good game. I think the only issue there, obviously, was that we'd had 11 games, nine games in about 15, 16 days. So nobody had really had a rest because they were practicing all the time in between the games. Obviously led to quite a tired play from the Pens, and the Devils being good at shutdown, as they're well known for, that pretty much meant that we just weren't getting any offensive time. As a result, we had two back-to-back 3-1 losses. It was quite frustrating at times. A lot of it you could be blamed on the reffing decisions. The refs seemed to make very dubious calls. They weren't consistent a lot of the time. There's a lot of new interpretation around some of the old boarding calls and things like that, and it seems to be that they're not quite sure exactly how far away from the board you have to be before they're going to call it a boarding call.
Well, so jumping in there, Rob, playing devil's advocate for a moment about the number of games coming up and the interpretation, I could argue, is that not the same for all teams? So this is going to even it out. So why is it the Pens have sort of seemed to be falling foul of decisions going against them?
I don't know. I don't know whether it was just the fact that they just didn't spend time checking up on what the league has said where the new rules were going to be and how they were going to interpret them. It could just be that they haven't covered them in the training sessions.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that they have covered them, but they're just not quite used to them because it's just, yet again, with the lockout and everything else, nobody's really up to game speed at the moment. Normally you'd be looking at game speed to be 12 or 13 games in after a full pre-season. You haven't had that. While some guys have been playing in the European leagues, obviously the rules will be interpreted differently in those as well. So I think it's just going to take a little bit longer to bed in. I mean, we'll cover it a bit later anyway, but last night's game against the Sens, I think they picked that up a lot better. There were no boarding calls at all in that one. So I think they're getting there, but it just wasn't quite right for the two weekend games against the Devils. They were, on top of the inconsistent reffing, they kept... Disco Dan kept changing the lines, and I felt that he wasn't quite sure. He seemed to be struggling for answers, and everything he was trying just wasn't working. We just weren't spending enough time in the offensive zone, and obviously that led to Gino getting frustrated with the shutdown tactics. And we know what happened when Gino got frustrated. He seemed to spend nearly all, probably a good 10-12 minutes or so in the box.
Yeah.
When you've got one of your mainline players sitting on the bench all the time, it's just not good. We had issues with the D. He seems to have almost found the perfect pairings on the D, but he's still not quite about that third line.
Mm.
If you can get his third pairing sorted out, I think it might work.
Yeah,
it's close, but it's not quite right in my opinion. Who
it's
knows?
Not...
Maybe next few games will tell.
Sorry, just jumping in here. I mean, is there sometimes a danger that we overanalyze results and overanalyze games, and you know, I mean, kind of one thing I was thinking of that had last weekend and the previous weekend being the other way around, everything in the world come Monday and Tuesday of this week would have been great.
Yeah,
you know, because would have been the Devils, would have been the Caps, everything's great. You know, this season's going to be different. I think you touched on it earlier, Rob, there that they'd had a couple of days off. They'd played four games in, I think, 7 days, which is not your usual kind of NHL schedule. Back-to-back games are going to be more the norm in this shortened season than they would ordinarily be. And is it just the fact that sometimes teams are going to have weekends like that or games like that where, for whatever reason, it doesn't work? I agree with you that the calls, particularly in the first period, I thought the calling in the first period more so was dubious. And I was screaming at the TV for it to be called both ways. And for whatever reason, it, you know, wasn't being called. Is that a problem with the Pens? Is it a problem with the officials? I don't know. It's probably a combination of the two. But I felt the discipline that we then lost going into the second and particularly the third period, I think that was possibly more the reason why I just felt we just lost it. And I don't know what it is with this current group, but they do... I think we saw it a few times last season that when they go big style and everything goes. And you touched on Bylsma changing lines and perhaps looking for an answer there. You know, I mean, I'm not kind of one of these guys that is calling for Bylsma at all. I won't do that. But sometimes you do, I don't know, do you perhaps kind of question sometimes what's going on there? I don't know. I mean, again, is it, am I then kind of micro-analysing everything and perhaps do you need to take a step back and think, yeah, okay, we lost two games, so what?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say about the discipline issue and the sort of switching off in games. And last night against the Sens, when they scored twice in 30-odd seconds, you just feared that, hang on, this is the Devils Mark III, really. But we sort of pulled ourselves together and galvanised, got back into the game, and then saw it home. Really, I mean, when I say the word discipline, obviously there's the Matt Cook thing that we can touch on in a minute. But putting that aside, we sort of seem to remain disciplined and not sort of lose our way like we've done in the previous two games. So for me, it was encouraging.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, if you look at the Sens game, then Gino didn't take a penalty. And when you look at what he's been doing in the previous games, that's a good move. That's a step up. Is he finally coming to terms with what he needs to do? I think initially Gino was a bit frustrated. I think coming from the KHL, where he'd been playing top line and playing high-quality games, and then coming back to a team and a league which you're almost going back to pre-season, I think he was showing a bit of frustration there where people weren't quite up to speed with him. And I think that occasionally would shine through in the games. But I think as the Pens are getting better, as they're clicking as units now, and as he's starting to get a bit more settled, I think he'll really knuckle down. I don't think you'll see him taking that many more penalties for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so.
you want your top scorers really out on the ice rather than sitting on the in the box, don't you?
Yeah. On that subject, I think it's probably a good time to briefly touch on the incident with Matt Cook. What are your views, guys?
Do you want me to go first on this one?
Yeah, you go, Rob.
I mean, obviously, I didn't see it live, as I'm sure you might be mentioning.
Did you not? Why?
No, I can't remember. Something happened. I don't know. It slipped my mind.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, obviously, I've watched it back. I didn't see it in the game, obviously, but I've seen replays, and maybe I'm not seeing this from an objective point of view because I'm watching a clip and I know what I'm looking for. It's probably different when you've seen it live. You see it happen. You think, oh, you know, what happened there? Then you see a replay. Thinking about this, and when I was reading about it this morning, and I thought, oh, you know, here we go again. This is it's Matt Cook, therefore, you know, he's guilty. And I was maybe slightly biased, perhaps, thinking about that. But then, I'll be honest, having watched the clip back, and I know I'm watching it in slow motion, and I know I'm looking for it, but I can't help thinking that left leg was a little bit kind of reckless. I don't know.
Whether it was
deliberate or not, I don't know. But you have to question why it was where it was.
I agree with you. I'm an apologist when it comes to Matt Cook because I think he gets a lot of bad press.
Completely, yeah, agreeing, yeah.
I did do an article for UK American sports fans on this point about his rehabilitation last year.
Mm.
So I was a little bit concerned when I saw how high his foot was. He did look a little bit dangerous, but for me, there was no intent to injure the player. I think he was just really trying to lever him against the boards with his left leg rather than looking to sort of stamp down, because that's just not on. And I don't really think he's that sort of player. I know every fan from every other team would take me to task over that. And some of the stuff that was posted on Twitter last night, which was way past offensive, was just sort of out of order, really. You know, he's just one of those players, isn't he? You know, if he plays for you, you love him because he just gets under other people's skins and everyone else hates him.
I agree. I was just thinking about this earlier. If that was Chris Neil on let's say Chris Letang, we'd be up in arms.
Yeah, we would.
You know, so you know, you've got to take a step back and say, yeah, ignore the fact that it's Matt Cook. That particular play, I thought he was probably a bit reckless. I will agree. He doesn't stamp down with his left foot, but it's in a dangerous position and really, he perhaps should have known better, and I'm sure, it's kind of obvious if he could have had that back, he wouldn't do that. But
yeah,
he still has to remember when he's playing that people are going to, you know, see that it's him, see that it's Matt Cook. And obviously we saw what Brian Murray and Paul McLean were saying afterwards. I thought that was a little bit, perhaps, kind of heat-of-the-moment stuff coming out there, you know, a little bit unfair, really. But the league have looked at it, I understand, and there's been no further action, so
that's fine.
Yeah, they looked at it earlier on today, and Shanahan's had a word with both of the GMs just to explain his decision. No action is going to be taken against him. They said it wasn't intentional, or it didn't look intentional. I think my only issue with it is, as you said, that left foot's a little bit high as he's going into the check. I mean, you're thinking, if you're hitting somebody up against the boards, you really want to be stable when you're doing it, because you want to be able to come off it in a good position from it. He's looking the wrong way anyway. He's not looking at Carlson as he's doing it. He's looking to see where the puck's being played to move on to the next play.
True.
So I don't think it was deliberate, but it was slightly wayward in his style, in his technique. And obviously that's led to his left foot being in completely the wrong position.
I think on that point we should leave Matt Cook to his innocence.
Well, can I just raise one more point about Cookie, actually?
Yeah, go far away, mate.
The main thing is, obviously, was the search for the all-important third man on that second line. When you look at who's been tried on it before, we'd had Kennedy, we'd had Jeffrey, we'd had Tangrady and Boychuk all tried on that second line. And in all the previous games, with all those different players, nobody, nor none of those four, had certainly picked up a single point whilst playing on that line. Cookie comes in, and in less than the two periods, he's straight up and he's clocking up points already. So you're looking and thinking, should you bring Cook up onto the second line full time?
Yeah, that's where Disco Dan's shuffling has started to work. I know Yorkshire Rob's got a little bit of an issue over it, but in this case, it seems to he's rolled the dice one more time and maybe he's come up trumps.
Possibly. I mean, I've got some views as to what they might be trying anyway, or what I think they should try, and I'm sure we'll cover those in a little bit through later in the podcast. But yeah. I just think it was interesting that with the four guys that they brought in to try it, and over the period of games that they've been trying over the 11 games or so, none of them had picked up a point. And then all of a sudden, Cook just drops on the line, and he's there, and he's picking up the points already.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did we not have a similar situation last season? When did Cook not carry, not have a stint on that line?
And he did. He came on that line. He played really well. He picked up quite a few points. I think he ended up with 25 or 30 points, didn't he? All of a sudden, he seemed to be a scoring machine at one point in time.
Yes. Yeah.
And that with his rehabilitation, everyone was really lauding him potentially for various trophies. It seemed to rile a few people that his name was being put up there for the awards at the end of the year because of how he'd been, not just as his good attitude, but the fact he'd been picking up points.
Yeah.
And I think it was just one of those ones where he was dropped in a line, which was a firing line anyway. That line was playing well no matter who was going to be on it. And it's quite hard when you've got two guys of that sort of skill in the Pens lineup not to sit on that line and pick up points with them. So I think it might say a lot more as well about the situation with the other four guys. Obviously, Tangrady's gone now. Kennedy's been placed back on the line that he works best at, and Jeffrey is still not quite sure. So at the moment, I think he's rotating around on the fourth line. So it's just whether they sit Boychuk back down there and what will they do with that. I mean, as it stands, they've called up for the training at the moment. They've called up Bo Bennett from the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. Will they give him a try on the line and see what's going to happen there, or has he been called up for cover? Obviously, time will tell. We'll have to wait and see as to what they bring out for the next game. But it looks like I think Dan's going to be trying a little bit more on that second line just to try and get something that works full-time and then settle down after that.
Well, while we're on the subject of these sort of movements that are going on at the Penguins, I mean, what are our thoughts on Lovejoy and Tangrady being traded away? I mean, personally, I understood the one. The other, I wasn't quite sure, especially where you've got sort of two defencemen on the injured reserve. But obviously, there are things going on in the background. So what are your thoughts on first Lovejoy going and then Tangrady going?
I think if I can I go on Lovejoy first? I think, for me, you know, when you I mean, as we do, being as where we are in the world, you quite often miss a lot of this stuff and you wake up in the morning and you read it in Twitter. I'm kind of standing in the shower flicking through stuff and I'm like, oh, wow. I saw that news and it was just kind of a, okay. There was no shock, there was no awe, there was no, you know, we've traded Lovejoy. It was like, okay, yeah. And it, for me, it just makes perfect sense. You know, the guy's out of contract in the summer. He'd obviously slipped further down the pecking order. Probably slipped out of favour a little bit as well. You know, he was never going to break in to the top four in Pittsburgh. He was always going to be a fifth or sixth D-man. You look at the guys we've got coming through, Dupree, Bortuzzo, Reese, Morrow, you know, still to come through as well. And for me, it just made sense before he loses any value at all, you know, let's get him out, give him an opportunity to go and play, because he's played some games in the NHL, he's done a reasonable job, but he was never going to get any better. And I think possibly Pittsburgh have been fair to both Benny and themselves there. And I think for me, we were in control of this because he wasn't going to clear waivers. I don't think that there's obviously a danger there. He could get picked up by somebody in our conference. Far better to have control to get the guy outside of the conference. And for me, everyone's a winner on this trade.
Is a fifth round draft pick fair value?
The guy, I mean, he's got what, a few months left on his contract. You know, he's a fifth round pick. I suppose it all depends who you draft, doesn't it? But,
yeah,
but if you look at it, you know, if you look at it at face value, you know, maybe we could have potentially got something a little bit higher. The guy's played 100 games in the NHL, so you know, he's not a mug. And
I mean, if you look at, as you said, fifth round, is it well enough? You look at the situation where not that many good players have been picked up in the fifth round. Yes, there are exceptions. You get it. People always quote people like Zetterberg and everything else like that.
Yeah.
But you say fifth round, I see it as a scenario where they're trading for more trading stock. They're moving on the players that they know they're not going to actually make any use of. As you said, you've got the four other D-men coming through. And so we're quite wealthy in D at the moment. I think the only issue we've got is they're slightly lacking in full NHL experience. But I get this feeling that Dan and Ray Shearer are looking at a scenario where they're trying to pick up potential bargaining chips for moves they're going to make in the future. So I don't think they've got somebody targeted as a fifth round pick, but I think they're going to be using this to add weight to other trades that go on. You know, have a player and a fifth round pick, and that might just sway other teams to let certain players go. So I'm thinking that they're using these to add weight to other trades.
Absolutely. It's probably one for a future podcast, but I mean, the cap space that we've got at the moment,
it's about 8.6 mil, isn't it? Or something
yeah,
like that.
It's a huge number.
8.9, according to the guys at CapGeek. But you know,
we'll go with CapGeek. They
hang on, whoa, sorry, 9.4. It's changed. 9.4, according to this, I'm looking at
now.
So.
Well, this is like Reuters.
It is. Hang on, it's changing all the time. Hang on.
Buy, sell. Right. Okay, very briefly then, Tangrady, seventh round draft pick. I saw someone on Twitter post that sort of Henrik Lundqvist was a seventh round pick. So it's you've got to pick those guys up in the seventh round, haven't you? As you said, it's all about who you pick rather than than which round it is.
It is. It's one of those ones where you obviously the Pens have a very good scouting reputation. They've got the scouts out there. The European scouts are really highly rated. And you're thinking, have they got somebody in mind? But then you're thinking, surely if we're watching somebody, somebody else is watching them as well. I find that the seventh round, I think it might just be a bit too low. I mean, I'm one of these people who's got this bizarre scenario where I actually think Tangrady was misused. I think, and people will shout me down for this, and I expect it, but, you know, he could have probably been put on the line with Sid.
Okay, can I just jump in there? That's Bobby Kelso making that point, by the way.
Not me. Yeah.
No, feel free to have a go at me, but I think that the issue is that if you drop Kunitz back down onto that second line with Neil and Malkin, you've got the team, you've got the line that did all the damage last year. And I think that's a settled line, and I think they'll rack up the points again. And the issue with Sid, I mean, I've seen this in various blogs and various reports from various other journalists, is Sid's ability to bring other players up to his standard. He's got this ability to actually double up their stats. So if you've got somebody like Tangrady, who's got pretty poor stats most of the time when he's playing, but you drop him on the line with Sid and Dupree, and you actually get that 100% increase in his ability, that drops him into maybe you want to class as a mediocre player, but it actually means that he starts generating points and generating work for all the other guys.
Yeah.
But you've also then got full-strength second line backing it up. So it's not just the fact that I'm trying to get the best out of Tangrady. It's a case of backing up that second line and giving you a full-strength second line and getting somebody onto that first line who Sid, as always, can boost the points for.
Yeah. Hasn't this been the issue, though, that for whatever reason, and I'm not entirely convinced why, but it seems as though the team has bent over backwards to find a way to accommodate Tangrady. And as you say, bumping him up to the top line, yeah, I'm sure he probably would pick up a few points playing alongside Sid. Crikey, if I could skate, I reckon I probably would as well. But, well, all right, I'm pushing that a little bit too far there. But you know, he's played 45 games, he scored one goal in 45 games. And I know stats don't mean everything, but you think playing alongside Gino, playing alongside Neela, that he would have picked up the odd point or two. And it's just not there. And I'm not being kind of unkind here, but is it just because he looks like he should be an NHLer that everybody think, well, this guy must have something? Yeah. But because for me, for whatever reason, aside from his physical attributes, he just hasn't got it.
Yeah.
And I don't see him staying long in Winnipeg either. And I'll be honest, I expect to see him turning up in Europe very quickly. Wouldn't surprise me if next season he turns up in the DEL or Switzerland and maybe he finds his level.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not being unkind. I just think we've persevered with this, not in an unkind way, but we've persevered. We've tried to find and tried to get something out of him, and it hasn't happened. And you know, at some point you have to say, okay, enough's enough. And I think that's kind of where we're at now.
Well, I want to make two quick points about Tangrady, and I think we'll probably wish him well and leave him there. Firstly, but it's related to the point that you make about he's probably going to move on again, is it's the baby pens I feel sorry for, because, you know, he's obviously helped them a lot. So, you know, whenever these trades go on, these sort of peripheral players, they're the teams that really suffer. So poor old baby pens. Hello to baby pens, by the way, who follow us on Twitter. And the second point, and this is definitely one for a future podcast, is now the whipping boy's gone, who's going to be the new whipping boy? Okay, moving on then. I think it's probably time in the podcast, if there's been a time in the podcast in the past. I know this is the first one, so it must be the time in the podcast for the fans' questions. First question is from Facebook, and a guy called Sean Cullen has sent us a message. It's about the club, and it's what's the possibility of a meet for the Brick Pens in the UK, say once a year? Guys?
It would be good, and I know we've had various discussions on Twitter about this before. Obviously, the main issue we have is the general spread of the members of the club at the moment. I know it was suggested we all get together on the beach down the Isle of Wight for a nice big barbecue and a few beers. Yeah. That sounds very nice in the height of summer, but obviously it's just the logistics of getting everybody down there. It would be good if we could all get together, especially, you know, to watch Game 7, Stanley Cup, watch the Pens lifted again. That would be nice if we get a room sorted for that. But I think we might find that we might try, or certainly aim to have some sort of get-together. I'd certainly like to be at a get-together. Whether we have regional ones, if we get big enough, or whether we just have one large one and just hope as many people can turn up as possible, we'll have to wait and see. But certainly get-togethers, are going to be a big part of keeping the club going.
Absolutely. I think it's key that we do get together. Where we do that is a different matter.
I would suggest probably a central location.
Somewhere in the Midlands, perhaps?
No, because you've got to take into account all the fans in Scotland, because we're the fans in Edinburgh, in Dundee,
Blackpool,
in Glasgow. I was thinking a little bit further south, probably sort of somewhere in the middle, sort of Yorkshire-ish, Sheffield, for example, would be a perfect...
That's not a problem, Rob. If you all want us round your house, we'll all come round.
Yeah, 35 of us or whatever it is, not a problem at all.
35? I thought we were up to about 950, weren't we? 960? Something.
Well, if you want all of them,
if you're offering, Rob, we'll all turn up.
I've got a reasonable sized garden. I'm sure we could find some room. But no, I think the point you made there, Rob, about, you know, having regional meetups, rather than splitting the group up, perhaps what we could do. I mean, obviously we've got a massive spread. It's the big thing about this, and the thing that has amazed me is obviously it's put me in touch with so many Pens fans around the UK. You know, I mean, obviously, I've known of a few that live locally, but obviously, been on Twitter now, and I've got in touch with so many people from all over the UK, from the South Coast right the way up through to Scotland. You know, and it's fantastic. It's, you know, I really feel as though I'm part of something special, and I think maybe we could organise it if we kind of reach that stage that we say, right, maybe kind of one time we have one in Scotland, then we have one in the north of England, one in the Midlands, one in the south, and just mix it up a bit so everybody gets an opportunity to go to at least one if you don't go to them all, and then just, you know, rather than just keep having it in kind of one location. I know there's going to be a whole host of organisation and things to deal with there, but I think it is important that we do try to push these things through, and I think if we could spread them around the country, I think that would be better.
Okay.
There we go. Done.
Oh.
Bit of waffle there.
Yep. Next question comes from Tom Keeling, who I believe is actually in the Burg itself. And he asks us, do we get strange looks being fans of ice hockey in an area where the sport's not well known or understood? I think Mr. Hare's probably well placed as being the Secretary General of whatever he was in the past to maybe answer this one first. You've obviously been involved in local hockey, Rob. Do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, that was some years ago, I would add there. I'm sort of kind of well away from that now. No, I mean, as I touched on earlier, Sheffield, you know, is a hockey town. Granted, there are two football teams here, and obviously one is far more successful than the other, but we'll not get into that. That's a totally different podcast altogether. The Steelers are a big feature in Sheffield. So to be walking around wearing a hockey jersey is not unusual, and you don't really get strange looks. I kind of living where I live not too far away from Sheffield University, and you find a lot of students will wear, you know, hockey jerseys. You can be walking down the street, or, you know, kind of driving down the street, and you'll see somebody in a Maple Leafs jersey or a Red Wings jersey. So it's not unusual. So do we get strange looks? No. I think a lot of people, because of the way the Steelers hit Sheffield in the early 90s, just about everybody went at some stage or other. You know, you had to go and see the Steelers. It was the hottest ticket in town. Everybody went. They were getting sellout crowds, 9,500 people every week. And so, you know, hockey's not as much as a minority sport as perhaps people might think, but that's in this town here. Other towns, I guess it must be different. I mean,
yeah, Warsaw's not exactly a hotbed of ice hockey, I must admit. It's a hotbed of many things, but ice hockey is not one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Stafford, and I found one day last year, walking down the town to do my shopping, as you always do, I'd got my Pens jersey on. I think it was my Mario jersey, and obviously got a rather large penguin emblazoned on the front. And yes, I was getting strange looks. And you think, I really don't care. I'm happy to be wearing this. I'm enjoying this. I'm proud of this jersey, as you would be any other sporting jersey for a team you support. So there I am walking through the town, and all of a sudden, somebody stops and confronts me and shouts out, is that a Pens jersey? And you're thinking, OK, that's a bit random. How's he going to know that? And he turns around, and he's got a Pens jacket on.
No.
In a town of 127,000 people, where I'm probably, or I thought I was the only ice hockey fan, I just happened to bump into probably the only other ice hockey fan.
Have you got him signed up? That's the question.
Well, we talked for an hour, but then I obviously just went on doing the shopping. I haven't seen him since, so maybe he was visiting, I don't know. But it was nice to be able to just suddenly bump into somebody and thinking, somebody I can talk to. But normally, yeah, I do get funny looks. I've got a few jerseys and a few T-shirts and various sweatshirts and hoodies, and I've got a few hats as well. And when no matter what you're wearing, everyone just sees this ice hockey playing penguin. People just stare. But you think, I don't care. I love my Pens. I'm always going to wear this gear.
It's just the jersey, Rob, that they're staring at.
Steady voice.
It could be the haircut, you know. It's it wavers a bit, you know. Getting into my 40s now, it's going a bit grey, it's going a bit long. I'm not quite at the comb over, Rob, but it could be other things. But I prefer to focus that they're looking at the penguin.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
I think we've got time for one more question, and it's from Rich Stoddart. He asked it via Twitter. And I'm going to put an extra rule on this question. I'm going to ask the question, and I want you to answer it with just one word only.
Oh, go on.
Okay. The question he asks is Paul Martin an asset or a liability?
Rob?
Rob.
What year's the question being asked about?
I know.
For this year?
Yeah.
Asset.
Rob?
I have to agree.
I agree too this year.
Yeah. Ask again next year and we'll tell you.
Well, later in the season perhaps. Okay. And the final thing I think we need to discuss on the podcast this evening is the upcoming games. We are at the Jets on Friday evening. We are at the Sabres on Sunday afternoon, I think, isn't it? It's 12:30 Eastern time.
Yeah.
And then we obviously got the dreaded Flyers next Wednesday at home. So what do you think we're going to do over the next three games, guys?
I think we're going to get three wins.
Because?
Because. I actually had us down, because obviously we were supposed to be recording last night. I actually had us down for losing last night. So really, you can take my predictions with a pinch of salt. But no, I think we go into Winnipeg on Friday and I think we win. I don't think we win convincingly. I just think we win by the odd goal. I think we reverse the loss from last month. And they're not exactly hot right now. I think we get a win there. Buffalo, I think traditionally we do okay against them. You know, again, they're not particularly hot right now. I think we go there, we get a win. The big game is obviously Wednesday. Yeah. We've not been particularly hot against the Flyers. I hate to say it, but I think over the past couple of seasons, they probably owned us, really, if I'm honest. And obviously, we've only picked up one regular season win at home in the past two seasons. So, you know, I think now's the time that we start to turn this around.
Yeah.
So I think beat the Flyers. Sorry, just from a personal point of view here, I'm going to be interested to see if the Flyers play Cestito. Obviously, he played in Sheffield for 3 or 4 months, the early part of this season. So despite him being a Flyer, he kind of won me over. So I've got a bit of a soft spot for him now, so I'm going to be quite interested to see if he plays. That's going to be quite a bizarre look.
That's at Brit Penn who said that, by the way.
Yes.
I mean, it's a good point you make. Good point you make, actually, about the home form of the Jets and the Sabres. I mean, Winnipeg are 3-3 and 0 at the moment at home, and Buffalo are 2-3-1, and the Flyers away from home are 2-6-0. So they're not any records we should be frightened of. So I am tending to agree with you that I'd be looking for 3 out of 3. Rob, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with Rob Howe, actually. I'd got down an OT loss against the Sens. I thought it was going to be quite a close game and maybe they would just squeeze it at the end. But I'd got the Jets, Sabres and Flyers all as wins for the Pens. Jets letting far too many goals in, as are the Sabres. I mean, they've had 48 goals scored against them. They do happen to have Venek scoring the points, but the guys backing him up are... they're putting in some goals, but they're not putting in enough to really trouble the Pens, I don't think. If we get that D sorted out, I think the Sabres will be an easy win. I think maybe the Jets will be not such a high-scoring game, but it'll be a win. And then it obviously all drops down onto the Flyers game on that Wednesday. The 2-6-0 away record for the Flyers, I think, is going to be the telling thing. I know, as Rob already pointed out, we've got that poor record against them recently. But I think we're starting to gel as a team. I think they're still struggling. They're 17% on their power play. I don't think that's enough. I mean, Pens are at 27.3 on the power play at the moment. A lot of that might have been because of the early season percentages on the power play, especially when they were trying that whole overload power play approach. Seem to have had a few games where they've wavered on that for a bit. But I think the 45 goals that the Pens have scored is just going to be far too much for the Flyers. Brisgolov in goal, maybe 4 goals, 5 goals for the Pens, probably 2 against. So I'll go a 5-2 win for the Pens on that game. Back to you, John.
I think that's a great way to finish the podcast, to be honest. We all agree, which is unusual. We're all forecasting 3 Pens wins, so that's 3 losses then, I would imagine. But anyway, thank you very much for, if you've got to the end of the podcast, listening to it. Obviously, give us some feedback via Twitter and Facebook. On the things you like, things you want to know more about, perhaps, with the club. Obviously, keep the questions coming in, because it's nice to keep these boys on their toes. We are probably going to try and include some more people as well, to so you're not listening to our voices every week. So thanks for listening. Obviously, if you've just picked up this podcast family, do follow us on Twitter. It's at BritPens Fan Club. And if you look us up on Facebook, I think it's facebook.com/ BritPens Fan Club as well. So thanks very much. And as I used to say, it's good night from me and it's good night from them.
Good night, everyone. And, let's go, Pens.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We are not an official fan club of the Pittsburgh Penguins. The opinions given are our personal ones and not representative of the Pittsburgh Penguins organization.